I'll be reading from James 4, 13 through 17. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good and ought to do it and doesn't do it sins.
If you have your Bibles with you this morning, let me invite you to open them to James chapter 4. James 4. Jeff, thank you for leading us in those songs. We appreciate the others who served this morning. Here in James 4, in my Bible, there's a little subheading above verse 13, and it says, boasting about tomorrow. And this morning we want to look at this section where we're warned against boasting or planning in a way that doesn't involve God. Let's read through this section one more time before we look at the verses in detail. Let's start in verse 13. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city and spend a year there and carry on business and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. James here is talking about a mindset that doesn't necessarily deny God, but it's a person that lives as if there is no God. For all practical purposes, this person could be an atheist. They don't say there is no God, they just live like there is no God. And there are a lot of people today that if you ask them, they would claim to be believers in God, but in reality, they live their lives as if they were atheists. James here describes the kind of person that we live with and work with. We see them all around. We're even that kind of people ourselves. Businessmen and women. People that are on a fast track in their career. People that are movers and shakers. They're successful. They're planners. They're traveling and they're making money, doing well. Well, you know, James here says there's a missing ingredient. And there is something wrong if that is the only aspect to that attitude. And so he gives a message here from God to those on the fast track who are living their lives as practical atheists. He says, first of all, your attitude is wrong. You've got a wrong attitude if that's your approach to life. Look what he says again in verse 13. Listen, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city and spend a year there and carry on business and make money. Definite plans. You know, we're going to go up and we've got a business trip to Kansas City, and next week we're going to go to St. Louis, and we've got this goal in mind, and we plan to make so much money, and this is our end of the year projection, and our profit charts are neatly worked out. And you say, well, what in the world could be wrong with that? I mean, we admire that kind of ambition. We admire people who are able to plan and execute those kinds of business plans. After all, doesn't the Bible say it's wrong to be lazy? If a man doesn't work, neither should he eat. Remember that verse back in the book of Proverbs? It says, go to the ant and take an example of the ant who labors through the summer so that he has food stored up for the winter. So what's wrong with being a businessman that plans, or a businesswoman, or someone who moves their way up the career ladder? What could possibly be wrong with that? Only one thing. If it's done without God, That's what makes it wrong. That's what James says. If you do that, great. But if you do it without God, that's a demonstration of a wrong attitude. It's an attitude of absolute self-sufficiency that James is warning against here. This is an attitude that says, I will do what I want to do, when I want to do, to get what I want out of life. There is a poem that some of you may have learned back in your school days. The name of it is Invictus. Translated into English, that's victorious. And listen to these words. They sound great. I have not winced nor cried aloud under the bludgeonings of chance. My head is bloodied but unbowed. It matters not how straight the gate or how filled with punishment the scroll, for I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Well, those are great words, but they are absolutely arrogant for any man or any woman to claim that I alone am the master of my fate, that I am the one who controls my soul. There's no humility under God in a phrase like that. It's the same sentiment as in that old Frank Sinatra song, I did it my way. You know, that tends, though, to be the spirit of 21st century America. It is the spirit of the self-made man, the self-made woman. And we do admire that. Someone who can land on these shores with no money in their pocket, who can buy their own brawn and grit, grab the bootstraps and lift themselves out of poverty and become a millionaire. The self-made man. But let me tell you something. That's an illusion. There is no such thing. No such thing as a self-made man or a self-made woman. That individual does not exist. God would ask anyone who made that boast or made that claim the same thing that we find recorded in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 7. What do you have that you did not receive? Answer that one. What do you have that you did not receive? Elsewhere in the Bible it says, God says, I am the one that gives man the ability to gain wealth. If you have a good mind, if you have a good background, if you have a good education, if you have a healthy body, that was given to you. And God is the giver. No one can claim to have done it themselves. So James says that's a wrong attitude. That's a wrong way to look at life. That's a wrong way to plan your future in the business world. There's another problem with it, according to James here. He says, if you go that direction, know this, your assumptions are faulty. Now, we all know the danger of that. If you have wrong assumptions at the beginning of a business plan or any other plan, if your assumptions are faulty, you'll not likely reach your goal. Look what he says in verses 14 and 15. He says, why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. James describes the human life, and the older I get, the more I know he's right. He describes the human life as a life that is as fleeting as the steam that comes out of a tea kettle. It's as short-lived as that warm breath you breathe out of your mouth on a frosty morning. Life is as ephemeral as a puff of smoke that slowly dissipates into the atmosphere. He says, you're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. You know, the prideful man, the one who is out for his own career, he says, I want to leave my mark on this company. I want to leave my mark in this world. I want people to remember me. And God simply responds, yeah, you'll leave a mark, all right. It's about as big as the mark that the morning fog left on the day. You know, even in nature, he uses this idea of a mist or a fog. And in nature, there are certain cataclysmic events that occur. And we'll remember the great San Francisco earthquake, or we'll remember Katrina that struck the Gulf Coast, or we'll remember the tornado of 2003. But who remembers the fog of 1994. I mean, you don't mark time with fog or mist. They're here and they're gone. You know, our time on this earth is incredibly short. Now, I don't want to depress anybody here unduly, but I want to be realistic. And James is very realistic here. He says life is short. If you say, you know, the average life goes into the 70s, by the time you guys here on the front finish your teens, did you know you're already through with a third of your life? That's how quickly it goes. And it speeds up the older you get. It seems much faster. Someone said, life is short. Eat your dessert first. Maybe that's the approach we all ought to take. Some of you have already achieved that goal of 70. It's interesting because Scripture says, you know, that the average life is 70, or by strength of years all the way up to 80. That was written thousands of years ago. And in spite of all the modern advances in science and all of the diets and all of the exercise programs, look how little the lifespan has changed in all those intervening years. You know, people talk about near misses they've had and close encounters with death through illness or accident or other things. But you know what the truth is? The truth is, right now, at this moment, you have never been closer to death. It's out there. It's coming for all of us. Again, I don't want to depress us. Death is no respecter of persons, and we know that death knocks on the doors of the young. It knocks on the doors of the middle-aged as well as the old. We never want to think that we're next in line. You know, I think everybody has this little plan in the back of their mind that I want to live to be 90 years old. And, you know, I want to live, that's the perfect age. And I want to be able to be strong and active all the way up until I'm 90. And then I want to go to the doctor after I've had a few pains. And he'll say, you know, you probably need to get things in order. And so I'll go home and I'll check out my will to be sure it's in order. And I'll get all my papers put together. I'll call in the family. I'll bring in the grandkids. Kiss them all goodbye. I'll put on my pajamas. I'll get in bed, curl up my toes, go to sleep and die. That's the way I want to end my life. Well, folks, it rarely, rarely happens that way. We have no guarantee. James says, you don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. And so today, in a very real sense, I'm a dying man preaching to you who are dying people who need to realize how short life truly is. And the message of James here in this section is live in the light of God as though this were your last day. Allow Him to be the one that affects the choices that you make. Don't live for yourself. Live for Him. You know, if there's money that you intend to give, some gift you want to give to bless someone, do it today. You don't know what tomorrow holds. If there's someone you need to talk to and get things straight with, clear up misunderstandings, don't wait till tomorrow. Do it today. If there's some note or some act of kindness you want to show, do it today. If your life is not right with God, don't wait until tomorrow. Do it today. Today is the day of salvation. I tell you, as a Christian, I would not let go of the hand of God for one 24-hour period. That would terrify me. For any amount of money, you could offer me $1 million, I wouldn't go one day separated from God. I wouldn't take that chance. And yet, there are so many people who postpone getting their lives right with God day after day with no gain at all. What a risky way to live life. All that stands between any of us in eternity is a single heartbeat, a single breath. Well, James offers this sober warning to the practical atheist. He warns against this attitude of self-reliance. He warns against the assumption that we are going to have time, that we will have a tomorrow. There was a 17th century philosopher, Blaise Pascal was his name, and he was a Christian apologist, and by that I mean he was a defender of Christianity. And he lived in a time when there were many people who doubted the reality of God and who challenged the faith of any believers. And so Pascal came up with this thing that's become known as Pascal's Wager. Perhaps you've heard of that. He had a number of friends who loved to gamble, and so he decided he would try to appeal to them just on the basis of the odds. You know, if you want to figure the odds, then look at how practical Christianity is. And he said, you know, there are two kinds of people. There are those who will live their lives as Christians, and then there are those who will live their lives for themselves. And he says, okay, let's just look at the odds. Here are two approaches, and you have the person who says, I want to live my life as a Christian. Now, if that person is right, if what this book says is true, what kind of payoff can they expect? You can't even begin to put a number on it. If what this book says is true, and we will go home to be with God, and we will be there forever, and we will never die, and there will be joy forever, you can't put a price tag on that kind of jackpot. Now, suppose the Christian is wrong. What will he lose? Not a thing. If I die, and if I'm dead all over, just like Rover, I've lived a Christian, I've had the best life possible in this world. And I lose nothing. I mean, either way, it's okay, but if I win, wow, look at that. Now go to the other side. What about the person who says, I will not live my life for God, I'll live my life for myself. Suppose the book is right. What have they lost? An eternity in hell, away from the presence of God. The loss cannot be calculated. What a tragic loss. What an eternal loss. Now what if they are right and this is wrong and they live for themselves? Then they're dead all over just like Rover. There's nothing really gained there. On this side of the equation, for the Christian, you stand to win everything. On this side of the equation, you stand to lose everything. And Pascal said to his friend, now if you want to be a smart gambler, which side of the equation do you choose? Now I think there are higher motives, obviously, than just the reward or the fear of punishment. But it makes sense. You know, if I live into my 70s, I've got maybe 15 plus years left on this earth. If I go ahead and extend my life up into the 80s, I've got another maybe 25 years of my life left to live. And I want to make a mark. I think we all do. I want to leave a legacy. I want people to remember me, and I'm convinced that there will be people that will remember all of us. We've got family and friends who've loved us, and as long as they are alive, we'll be in their memories. But folks, let me tell you, it won't take many generations before there won't be anybody that's ever heard of you. It won't take many centuries before even those etchings in granite on your tomb will eventually crumble and fade, and you've seen those old tombstones that are illegible. You know, one of these days, there'll be a group of people sitting around playing hearts or spades, and one of them's going to say, hey, did you hear, what was that guy's name that used to preach at sunset? Wasn't it Joe Bright? I heard he died the other day. And I say, oh, really? Well, how much did you bid? And the game will go right on. Nobody will even pause. And it's going to be that way for all of us. You know, it's sad to think about being forgotten, and that's why it is so wonderful to be a Christian. Let me tell you this. Jesus knows every one of your names. And Jesus will never forget that name. And when you live a life that is connected to God, that gives your life ultimate meaning. To have your life recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life, to be given that reward of living forever and ever with Him, never to be forgotten. That's the ultimate goal, I think, that resides within the heart of every man. Jesus said this about those who would live their life apart from Him. In John 15, verse 5, He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me, and I in him, he will bear much fruit. But listen to this. Apart from me, you can do nothing. True life, true joy, true hope is found only in Jesus Christ. That's the message that James gives us here in the end of chapter 4. And so this morning, I want to throw the challenge out to you. Where are you finding meaning, ultimate meaning in your life? I hope you'll live your life always for Him and in Him. We're going to sing a song now. It's an old favorite song, Just As I Am. And it simply is our plea to God, God, will you accept me? As bad as I am, as weak as I am, and God has promised to accept us and to cleanse us and to make us into better people. That's His promise. If you need this morning to come in faith to accept Him in the terms that He's extended to us, we hope you'll do that. If you need the prayers of God's people, let us pray for you. If you need anything this morning, if you'll let those needs be known, we'll do our best to help you meet those. Won't you come now as we stand and as we sing.